You're listening to The Podcastle. We're here for Shark Week, and today we have a very special guest, Stephanie Brendel from Shark Allies. Visit them at sharkallies.org. Stephanie is the founder and executive director of Shark Allies. She has lived in countless stunning locations around the world, most notably Guam, Bali, and Hawaii. She has always been keen on big animals, caring for and training horses is where she started out. But when she made her way to the ocean, she got the shark bug immediately and immersed herself in underwater photography and video production. From there, Steph clocked hundreds of hours of diving with sharks of all shapes and sizes and has been working in ocean-related professions for years, one of them being a shark diving operation in Hawaii called Hawaii Shark Encounters. Steph owned and operated with Jimmy Hall since 2002 and has since sold the business to new owners. In recent years, her political work has put Stephanie on the forefront of shark conservation, in particular in the Pacific region and the U.S. She was a driving force behind the first shark fin trade ban in the nation of Hawaii in 2010 and Florida in 2020, and has dedicated her life to the conservation of sharks, working on many other fin bans and shark sanctuary campaigns. Steph has worked as a team member or consultant for several other great NGOs and founded Shark Allies in 2007 in Hawaii. In 2014, she brought the organization to Los Angeles, where she met most of the core Shark Allies members. Steph is a shark warrior, to say the least. She packed up her life and moved part-time to Brussels, Belgium, to take on a lead role to end the trade of shark fins in the EU, which is the European Union. So, Stephanie, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for sitting through my introduction. Most people record it before, but I figured you're here, and I think it would look cool on camera to have you like being here for the intro. So thank you so much. How are you doing?
I'm good, and I'm really happy to be here. And I want to thank you for some of the work you've done for us in the past. That's always great.
Oh yeah, happy to help.
Yeah.
And I encourage listeners too, and I'll say this at the end, but obviously check out the website, Shark Allies, but also like really do a deep dive into the work you're doing and what Stephanie has done, because it's very inspiring. And if you love sharks, which you should, you really need to go there. And please make a donation at sharkallies.org/donate, and also sharkallies.org/take-action-now. So if you go to the website and you look at the take action, there's all kinds of cool campaigns you can add your voice to, and also, you know, listeners, educate yourself on what's going on. So Stephanie, how did you, I know you said you cared for horses growing up. So you've always been like a big animal fan, so to speak.
Yes, you could say that. I always was intrigued by actually interacting with animals. You know, I always wanted to be close to them. I wanted to, experience the world. And it was just sort of innately in me. And where I grew up, you know, the only animals that were even close to wild or interesting were horses. You know, in the middle of Germany, there isn't a whole lot of wilderness going on. Now there would be, but at the time, you know, it was horses. And I fully basically leaned into that for many, many years and thought that was going to be my life. But then traveling came along and I realized I needed to see more of the world. And then I discovered the ocean and everything changed.
Yeah. And because that's such a, I mean, to go from horses to, you know, a part of Germany to discovering the ocean, it kind of opens up, you know, a whole nother world and perspective. So I'm asking how did Shark Allies come to be? Like, what was your first encounter with sharks? What drove you to want to create such a wonderful organization?
Well, through scuba diving, you know, a lot of us that scuba dive, you know, sort of pick their favorite thing. Some people are really into macro life and photography, and they're looking for all of the really curious small critters. Some people love turtles and coral reefs. And I just, again, was kind of drawn to the bigger life forms, the pelagic from whales, manta rays, sharks. And eventually, you know, sharks became more of a niche because I realized that they were really hard to find. And they were pretty fascinating to be around because there are also predators. So there's a whole nother layer there to them that is intriguing to me. And because of the work I did with, you know, tourism and taking people shark diving, I realized what an impact sharks were making on people that dove. But I also the more you learn, the more you realize how many big problems there are. And at some point, I just really couldn't, I couldn't just hang out and dive with sharks anymore. I had to do more. And as little as I knew, I realized it would probably be helpful to have a nonprofit. And I just started Shark Allies sort of on a, well, let's just do it and see what happens, you know, not with a whole lot of planning in mind. I just knew something had to be done. And I just, you know, I learned by doing. I wasn't really, you know, ready to go into conservation. And I still kind of find it strange when we talk about conservation, because it's really advocacy. You know, I think it's more about speaking up for the animals and trying to get something done. And surprisingly, there's always something people can get done. And that's kind of where I am in my part of advocacy and conservation, because I'm not, you know, traditionally academically educated. I basically spent my time in the ocean, learned about sharks, and then decided to do something like so many people do.
Well, see, that's an awesome answer, by the way. But that's kind of where the magic happens. I mean, it's one thing to look from an academic standpoint and look at numbers and go, well, let's do something. But to swim with sharks and to dive with them and to see them is beautiful on its own. But to take that with you and want to speak up and give them a voice, the voice that they don't have, is very inspiring and very important, especially with, as we know, how many sharks are killed each year. I just feel like the world needs more people like you. And when to do Shark Allies and not have like a background in the nonprofits or, like you said, academia, to bring it to what it is today is huge. It's such a big deal. And I need to talk about the, you were in Europe for a few months and very busy. And I know we were planning the show. I was emailing Stephanie and she was like 12 hours ahead and running around. And I said to my wife, I was like, yeah, I went to the grocery store today, but the person I'm scheduling the show with is like talking on the EU, the European Union shark fin ban. And like, I need to like get more involved. I felt so small compared to the work you were doing. So I need to like bring up, what were you doing the last few months there? What happened? What is the response? Like, what's going on with the EU right now?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Well, first of all, I have to say that I have to admit that ignorance is bliss in many cases. I very often find myself just jumping into something and figuring it out as I go.
Yeah, me too.
Some of the biggest things I've done, it was lucky that I didn't know what I was getting myself into, because I would have never done it. And I just always approach things from a point of view that, well, let's step into it and see what happens. And I can always find people that can help. I can always reach out and find the information I need. I can learn things very quickly. And, you know, even policy and advocacy, you know, on state level and national level, it seems so complicated. But if you surround yourself with good people that lead you through it, you learn very quickly. And that's what ended up happening to me when I started Shark Allies in Hawaii. I got involved in the shark fin trade ban, which was a completely new thing. And it was, again, it was, everybody said it's never going to happen. It can't be done because there's too many Asian communities in Hawaii that want to keep it alive. There's too much business happening in the Pacific with fins. And of course, that's always the first reaction. If it's hard, it can't be done. And we tried it anyway, and it worked. And it set in motion a whole series of fin bans in the US. And then I ended up, you know, doing the same thing in Florida, because it was sort of perceived as can't be done in Florida for political reasons. So I thought, well, let's give it a try. And it took a little bit longer than we thought, but we managed to do that. And, you know, the US followed, Canada followed. Not saying they followed me, but that the wave just continued, you know, and lots of people jumped on the bandwagon and pushed this forward. Until there was a proposal by a citizens initiative in Europe to introduce a Europe-wide fin ban. And, well, again, right. I supported it from afar at first and then showed up for some of the presentations, the first presentations in the European Union to the Commission. And I realized that this was a big deal and that maybe I should dedicate some time to this. And at the time, it was also needed, because there needed to be somebody that had experience with these fin bans. It's quite a specialized little corner of conservation. and policy, and you end up learning so much over the years that it's very difficult for other people to quickly jump into this. So I packed my bags, and the initiative, they got me an apartment in Brussels, and I flew to Brussels, and I've been working there for about 4 to 5 months to get things through the first stage. And we were actually quite successful. So once again, I arrive in Brussels. I don't even really know where I need to go, but I find out, I reach out to people, you know, that have been working there for a long time, and everybody is always very helpful and they point you in the right direction. And it's amazing how much you can get done that way.
Wow. It is. It is. And thank you for doing that. And the sharks, thank you too. You have saved millions of sharks. And to do that, the journey from Hawaii to Florida to the EU, it's so true that a lot of people look at such big welding problems and saying it's too big, it can't be done, it can't be done. But if you look at history, history is measured by those people that have done things that people said couldn't be done. And you're one of them, and you've done that. And it's just so, in 2023, it's just so stupid to me to think there's still people that would want to eat like shark fin soup and want to have that. Like that will never make sense to me in 1,000 years. It's like saying I want to eat like the hump off a camel or like the hoof of a horse. It's just so stupid that that's still a thing. And there's people who do that. It doesn't make any sense at all. So we obviously have to stop that. And just hearing everything you've done since you started is just so inspiring. And yeah. Other people take note too.
Let me jump in on this, what you just said, please. Though, because we might not understand why people would want to eat shark fin soup.
Right.
And there's a lot of things we do that other people don't understand either. You know, you could go into everything from gun violence to, you know, I won't touch these subjects.
That's true.
There's also a lot of things that we eat that other people disagree with. When I'm in Germany, there are things that we traditionally eat there that would absolutely gross out half the world. So I think it's not so much the problem of what people want to do. I think, of course, it drives the demand, but I think it's also that governments are not willing to be the adults in the room and say, well, you might want to do that, but how about we don't do that anymore because it hurts everyone else.
Right.
And to me, it's sometimes as simple as that is somebody needs to make that decision. And unfortunately, we sometimes have to do this through policy. Mm-hmm. It's too bad that we have to make laws about everything, but
it's the only way to get things done. Sometimes.
Well, I mean, if fisheries regulations haven't been working, if they would have worked, we wouldn't have all of this problem, all these problems with overfished stock.
Bycatch and everything,
all bycatch, all the, you know, the purseiners, the longliners, and just how slow it is to get any species protected takes years. And there's always this sort of bias towards industry and making sure industry stays alive because, you know, it's money, it's jobs, it's economy, not realizing that all of that will go away when you overfish. I mean, you can start thinking about protecting things and come up with smart transitions of industries without destroying them while you still have something, but we tend to wait until it's absolutely collapsed and then everybody's, you know, starts screaming and yelling and wanting to help from the government. So I think it's finger pointing probably doesn't work very well. And you know, obviously with the fin trade and with the fin shark fin soup consumption, it is mostly in Asia, but all the countries happily supply the fins. So that's why when I talk to policymakers in Europe and they want to say, well, it's those guys over there, I'm like, yeah, but you're happily producing the stuff, you're happily delivering it. That's just as bad. It's like saying you shouldn't do drugs, but I'll be happy to sell them to you and produce them and grow them.
Good point.
You know, so I feel everyone that is remotely part of this trade has a responsibility. And you know, it also happens, everybody likes to point fingers in the EU. What I heard a lot is, well, if we don't do it, somebody else will do it. I'm like, are we really talking on that level? I mean, are we in kindergarten now? You know, like,
where are the adults at?
Yeah. Well, and it's always this notion that, well, since we are the very best in managing this and we can do it in a responsible way,
Of course.
Shouldn't we continue it? And then that way, the bad guys don't get to do it.
Right.
And it's a completely insane argument, because the bad guys, whoever they are still going to do it. They're not waiting.
Oh, yeah. They're not going to stop.
Yeah, they're not going to move out of the way saying, well, what you guys are doing is we're going to hang back.
Yeah.
But the moment you stop, we're going to come in and just be pirates. It's already happening.
Right.
So,
it's money. It's money. Money makes the world go round. People will do whatever they
have
to do.
It was shocking to me that that goes all the way into the EU Parliament and the EU Commission, where you would think that's some of the highest level policy making there is. And you sit in the meeting and somebody gives you this argument, well, if we don't do it, the other guys do it. I'm like, are we seriously saying that right now?
It's kindergarten.
Yeah.
So frustrating, especially when you're talking about that level of policymaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you kind of want more of an adult in the room to say, like, hey, we can be better than this, and let's lead by example as opposed to just pointing a finger. You know? And that's why I need good leadership. It's up to the governments to say, hey, these species are going to be gone forever unless we do something. Let's do something now before it's too late. You just need good people.
But sometimes these arguments get misused by someone that has been influenced by fisheries lobbies or certain political parties that are more conservative. They will use these arguments because it sounds good. It sounds like they're taking care of the little guy. It sounds like they're protecting an industry, income, food security, all of those things.
Always.
That's why it is so important that our side is represented to say, I believe in all those things. You know, I want jobs, I want money, I want economy, I want food security, but you're actually doing the exact opposite. So if there's no one around to make those arguments, they're using the exact same arguments we're using to keep it going. And if we're not around, then that becomes the norm. And that is also what policy makers and leadership start believing, because they can't know everything about sharks and fisheries. They're believing what is being delivered to them. So this is where this kind of advocacy on the ground is. It's so incredibly important and overseen. People think that you just need to sign some petitions and then make a lot of noise on social media or, you know, get something proposed, and then they hang back and they hope for it to go.
Right.
And the majority of the work really is day to day, talking to people one-on-one, getting them convinced, giving them the material they need, finding those people that actually want to do the right thing, and helping them get enlightened, to speak, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of work.
And I can tell you, you know, this is one thing I'd like to really get across to anyone that wants to help, is people underestimate how much money is needed to do that kind of work. Yet there are very few foundations that will even support policy work or anything that looks like lobbying. They spook away from that like crazy. So some of the most important work is the least supported. I can raise money to do a study, to maybe even supply materials or to do a PR campaign. I can raise money for events. But the moment I say we need people on the ground and we need support to support them with good wages so they can dedicate their careers to this.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to touch it, you know?
They don't want to go near it. Yeah. And that's the thing too. A lot of people, they just, if they talk about it here and make a splash here and walk away, in their mind, they think, well, I've done it. It's going to all work out. And to your point about the jobs and stuff like that, that's always such a go-to with a lot of politicians on various issues. You know, it's always like, hey, this coal mining operation is killing the state. It's like, well, there's jobs involved. It's always like jobs, you know, and it's never greater than the sum. You know, they're like, oh, well, these 50 jobs are more important than, you know, 10 generations from now, which are going to die because of this. And it's always such a cop out to me when it's like, well, it's the jobs and this. It's like, you got to understand the larger, I don't want to tell someone they're not going to be able to work either, but that's not really what you're doing. It's the greater good of the planet. And you got to not think globally, compassionately like that, I think is very irresponsible on a political level. But so everything you're saying, I'm on board with, and I couldn't agree more. And I want to ask you, so now that you're back, you spent months in Europe, what are you doing now? Like, what's your next, I know you're at so much going on, but like, what's your next focus that you're really trying to like jump into?
Well, the
Since you're
European
back.
issue is that that campaign will be ongoing, but we have a little bit of a break from that right now. But while the commission, you know, does some research and they need to do some impact assessments, which sounds incredibly boring to most people. And they're like, oh, Jesus, this sounds like they're just delaying. But really, essentially, you cannot on the EU level introduce legislation unless you've done impact assessments, because if you do, the very first thing somebody will say is, you can't tell me how this is impacting my industry and what you're going to do about it. So I think this is a really good step. We just have to make sure that now we have to supply them with technical material, you know, information, data, research, proposing, you know, the type of experts that should get involved. So it's not just coming off from fisheries. So that's going to be ongoing for another at least minimum a year to 2 years. Some of it in person, some of it remote. We're also working in a larger coalition of really awesome groups here in California, with Turtle Island Network and Oceana and a couple other groups to deal with the set gill nets. Most people think gill nets are already outlawed in California. Well, the drift gill nets were, but now we're still dealing with set gill nets.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into too much of the details of what that exactly is, but you can imagine that, you know, nets kill a lot of animals. And that is something that's completely unnecessary because there's other ways of catching the same fish. So that's going on. And generally, I'm always trying to figure out with Shark Allies how I can, you know, increase capacity. And I hate even saying that because everybody uses that. But I'm trying to figure out how to raise more money to get more good people working full time. Because right now we're doing everything you know, as minimally as we can, as professionally as we can at that rate. But really, we could get so much more done if we had more people dedicating their days to supporting these campaigns. We have endless amount of work that could be done, but we can only take on so much. On the other hand, I've made a decision last year that I would not keep underpaying people just because we don't have the funding. I would rather not have employees than have them sacrificing and being underpaid. That is just a constant thing that irks me about nonprofits and the perception that you should do it because you love it and you should do it because you care.
Therefore,
you cannot get paid what you deserve. And so people, good people, constantly come and go because everybody needs to make a living. Everybody needs to eventually move to another job, and we lose really good people.
Yeah,
I've made a decision that I would, you know, I want to pay people decently because this is very passionate work and everybody leans in completely when they do this. So we should do the opposite. We should really support that. Trying to figure that out is a challenge that's next for me because I want to increase our team. And I want to make sure that they're taken care of and that they can get health insurance and all the things that everybody does when they have other jobs.
Yeah.
And that's a big commitment. I don't know if I can do it because half the time I can't even pay myself, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I'm failing a little bit on that end. I have also never really 100% committed to it because the moment there's something like come to the EU and, you know, lobby for sharks, I'm off and doing that. And that takes away from really organizationally ramping things up. But again, it's a challenge.
It's a challenge
I have to figure out. Yeah.
But it sounds everything you're doing is great. And especially just acknowledging that. And yeah. I know I work at a nonprofit and I'm a rare case. I've been there long. I've been there for 7 years, but I've seen like 20 people come and go because, and I think we do it right. But, but I feel like you're absolutely right. There's that perception where, oh, you should do it because you love it. You know, just sacrifice everything. And that's not really how you want to do it. So it sounds like you have the right idea with everything. And I see what I love that you're passionate about, you know, I got to go fly to Europe right now because this is happening. Like you want to jump in there feet first and not sit by the wayside. So I get it. And I encourage people to make a donation too on your website, because I think you do great work and I hope you're around forever. So
Well, I think the organization will be. So if one point if at one point it turns out that it's better, that it becomes part of a larger foundation, or if there's some other people that can take it over, mm-hmm. I will always do this kind of work, but it doesn't have to be through Shark Allies. I've worked with other groups and I've done contracts for other organizations or worked for more than one group at a time to just pull through with a coalition or some sort of a group effort. However the work gets done is fine. I think in general, it's just if people love the ocean and if they love sharks, they should really think about whether an investment into that world wouldn't be something really purposeful. You know, in other words, right. If somebody has money to give for ocean conservation, maybe consider giving it for sharks, because shark conservation is the least supported, because they are the least, popular animals, you know, right. And also a lot of people don't realize how much they actually need. How much help they actually need.
Oh, help they, absolutely, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry, I just got some weird notice. Sharks, I just hope we get to a point where most people can realize we don't need to fear them. They're not going to hurt you. That's a bipartisan effort. It's a socially, conceptually, just necessary idea that people need to understand that sharks are not going to hurt you. The media needs to get on board with that. It drives me crazy every time there's like a shark spotting or something, or somebody gets bit. They're like, shark attack in the Bahamas. And it's like, that's not, more people die from vending machines than sharks a year. Like, just, we need to stop with the villainization, first of all. And they need help more than ever. And if you are going to make a donation, if you do have funds for ocean conservation, put them towards sharks. You know, they need it. They need it more than ever.
Yeah.
Final question.
Go ahead. No, I on the fear factor, I think I'm at the point where I'm telling people it doesn't really matter so much how you feel about sharks, whether you scare them, whether you ever want to see one. But unfortunately, we really need them for ocean health, and they play such an incredible role that if you want to have a future, you know, with a somewhat functioning ocean, you just have to accept the fact that we need sharks. And the cheapest thing to do is to protect them rather than trying to bring anything back later on. That counts for everything in the ocean. You know, we always react when a species is nearly gone, and then we throw millions of dollars at them. You know, just look up what's happening with the vaquita dolphins in Mexico.
Yeah,
you know, nothing
like 20
was
left.
Done. Yeah, and then suddenly everybody feels sad for them and throws millions at it. But if we would have had that money 20 years ago to go towards that, probably could have saved a lot more.
Oh yeah, we probably wouldn't even be talking about it as much if we did that 20 years ago, you know? Yeah. And now it's on the forefront. Do you think, okay, so we all know, you and I both know, sharks, they're an integral part of the ocean. You need them. And I agree with what you're saying, where let's solve that now rather than try to bring them back later. Do you think we are at a point where the perception of sharks is shifting more, or are we still very, very leagues away from people getting it? I know we made progress, but are we going to be there in our generation, in our lifetime, where people know sharks aren't these villains and we can stop villainizing them, vilifying them?
Well, I think it's changed a lot. I have seen it change a lot in the last 15 years. I think enough people now know that sharks are important. I don't see the villainizing as the main problem anymore, to be honest. It's the fishing. It's the overfishing. And they're not fishing them because they think sharks are villains. A lot of them actually like sharks, but it brings in money. So I think we have enough. I think public perception, if it was even stronger, it could help us make more changes. But I we're trying to show that sharks are not monsters is probably now sort of working at the wrong end of conservation. And I sometimes say that to influencers that insist that they're doing conservation because they're seen diving with sharks. It's like, it's fine, but you know, you got to move on to more things than that. It's a good beginning, but there's more important work that needs to be done. I looking at other predators on land and how society has treated them, I don't have hopes that we're ever going to welcome any kind of competition or any predators into our space. Because look at what's happening with wolves and bears. You have one showing up, in Europe, there is a huge discussion about the wolves coming back, and people are just furious about the wolves taking some sheep and acting like normal predators. So I don't think that we have much there that we will change. I think it just has to be that there are protected areas where sharks and or wolves or any animal can thrive, and whether people like it or not. And the more we're encroaching on the ocean as our space now, this is where the competition comes in. You know, this is where people say, I want to catch that fish, and the sharks are taking that fish away from me. I want to swim on this beach, and it's not safe. I don't feel safe. We need to do something about that.
I know.
That's a new thing. That's not something people said 40 years ago. So I fear that the just the competition that people feel with species, we don't have a good track record, and it's and sharks are going to suffer from that as well. So again, it just has to be a decision where, you know, we create enough protection and policy and wild areas where they can thrive, whether people like them or not.
Right. Yeah, totally. And take notice and listen to folks like yourself. You know, it's funny when you mention the influencers, it's like, hey, I got a picture in Hawaii with a shark. Like I'm a conservationist now. I'm saving the world. It's like, well, it makes for a good picture, I guess, but like, there's a lot more you got to do.
Yeah. I mean, the good pictures of people diving with sharks definitely have changed the perception, so that they have definitely contributed.
Sure,
I just
sure.
say, don't stop short with that.
If yeah, don't stop really, there.
Don't stop there. I mean, that's the process I went through. I used to dive with sharks and people were taking pictures of me with sharks or video.
Yeah.
But I just at some point thought, wow, is it all I'm doing? You know, I felt like the sharks were calling me out and going, yeah, enough now, you know, move on and you can do more than that.
See? Amazing. Yeah. So inspiring. But that'll be our time today, Stephanie. Okay. I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show. And please come back again sometime. I feel like we just scratched the surface and we could do so much more.